A62. Number 17B.
So, here you have a tone, huh, of spirit, of that. Can you see now you don't use those ideas which we have on the list, but you use the tonality of it. And then, again, it was brought out by, yes, that the Lord said, you know, when he did choose David, that he chose him after his heart, because when they did choose Saul before as king, they chose it because he was one head higher than all the others, huh? He must have been quite an impressive character, perhaps like MacArthur or so, a terrific big thing, huh? Just towering above, physically, above all the others. And here you have that spiritual concept of a little David, huh? They not even wanted to mention him, that little David existed, when they brought all the brethren, huh? And Samuel said, but don't you have another child, you know? None of these are chosen, don't you? Oh, yes, somewhere out in the fields we have some little boy, huh? He's just looking after the sheep and so on. So he said, get him here, huh? It's always that unpretentious quality that may be the king. Not to bolstering. You see, it's that unpretentious, hidden quality that is slowly but sturdily taking root and getting stronger and stronger until the time comes. The time always comes when it comes to the open. Or you can see Jonathan in fighting the enemy. Jonathan said, well, the Lord can be victorious by many or by few. You see, by many or by few. Saul, on the other side, always only went into battle when he had many. He always counted them and he always wanted to have many. He believed in mass. Jonathan believed in quality, quantity and quality. Huh? Can you see? Spirit is quality. And therefore Jonathan had already a sense that it is not really matter, the mass, the number, that does anything, but that it is the little spiritual inkling that is much bigger and much stronger than anything else. You had Saul, who was always described as that he took any strong man. Can you hear? See, when you read that, you at once get the sense, he was relying on muscles, huh? And on matter and on body, huh? They must be toughies, huh? That must be big, huh? That was his reliance. And we have in spirit that we have to rely on spiritual things. Then you always had that all those stories in here are where it showed that Saul always wanted the good in evil. The good in evil. He always wanted to say, well, I don't mind to destroy evil, but I like to say what I feel is good about evil. And he always saved that which seemed good in evil. You know, how is in his wars against the enemy, when he was commanded by Samuel that he would have to wipe out everything, to destroy everything, he never obeyed. He always took for himself that what seemed to be good for himself. Huh? The best cattle and the best things he saved for himself. So he could never really make a clear-cut distinction, you see, what is evil and what is good evil. Yeah. He always spared, as they say, the best of the spoil. Whereas he had always the command to make a clear-cut distinction, that the sword of spirit should cut right through. He wasn't quite happy with that. Why should he kill all the best spoil, huh, and throw it away? No, that could be helpful. So there was always that sense of negotiating with the wrong of
mingling,
yes, compromise. Thank you. Of compromising. He always followed the crowd. If the crowd was not behind him, he didn't do anything. You see, whereas Samuel always stood there all alone and said, "No matter what you yell out, I go along my idea." Whereas Saul always was afraid of the crowd. Mass, quantity, was a big thing for him. For Saul, you see, David was but a youth. You could see again how he could never really value the spiritual. And whereas David, he says, was chosen because the Lord looked at his heart. These are perhaps in a few terms the various illustrations that Samuel gives here, in order to show really what happened in that unfolding period, or in that leavening period, where it was brought out that Saul, the physical, was constantly relying on quantity, where Jonathan had a leaning towards the spiritual and knew that the spiritual can work just as well as the material. Then you had David coming on, which really saw that everything has to do with his heart, with the spiritual attitude. That's the stone of spirit. Huh? Does it come out clear? Do you see the difference between mind? Huh? In mind it was all a question, shall I go to the divine mind for a solution, for the light? If I go to the divine mind as the light, to the parent mind, will it bring forth? Yes. So Hannah went to the Lord. She gave everything to the Lord. She promised everything to give back to the Lord. When Samuel was born, she weaned him away from her. She said, only then, when I don't want anything anymore for me, I give him back to the Lord. And only when he was weaned away from her materially, that she gave it to Eli, call him Eli or Eli?
Eli.
And sent him to Eli. Samuel, when he was with Eli, gave everything to mind. In that tone of minus principle, it's that incident where he said, I hear, O Lord, just tell me what to do and I will do it. He had that sense of not wanting to do something by himself, but always that what the divine mind asked him to do, you see. And so in that period we can see that everything was always given back to the one mind, to the parent mind. Then, here in the tone of spirit, we have this leaven of spirit coming in, leavening, so to say, the whole lump of materiality, the whole lump of trusting quantity, of trusting matter, and little by little bringing out that the spiritual alone can unfold and be strong. Does that sound reasonable? Yeah? All right, then we come to the third big period in David's life. What do you feel stands out here very, very definitely? This third period is perhaps one of the most very definitely standing out as a separate step.
Burning of the tares.
The burning of the tares. Would that be Saul, the burning of the tares?
No, and the gathering of the wheat.
and the gathering of the wheat in the barn. Could you... Yeah? Is that really the tone there? Yeah? How is it brought out in the story? Oh, it's a terrific story here. Can you remember some of the very big points in here?
The protection of David.
The protection of David. Yes. How would you see the protection of David? Usually protection is love, but just the same, it wouldn't matter.
He was safe no matter what he did. He was always protected. He did what he thought he should do, and he was always protected. He came to a safety.
Yeah.
Isn't that so?
Yeah, that's so. Huh? The safety of it. Huh? But it was always the safety that he found when he was still on the way. See, it wasn't so much that that love sense where everything is protected towards the outside and everything is fine. He was, what is another idea that stands out here very clearly? Yes?
I think there is this consolation aspect, how the physical and the idea is safe.
And the idea is safe, we come back to the safety, yes?
It preserves,
yes. And then you look at the story. What is very obvious here that is typically so?
Yeah.
Translation, but of what? You see, we can have also a lot of translations, huh? What kind of translation? Is David at that point constantly sitting in a nice little garden under the shadow of a tree and just sitting there and dreaming about reality and how safe he is, and so everything is fine, yes, I'm protected about everything. How was that?
No, he was with the Philistines. He was protected even when he was among the Philistines.
Well, he's constantly fleeing.
Yes, from here to there. Always.
From here to there. Constantly from sense to self.
And he refuses to take the law into his own hands and get rid of his enemies.
Yes. Uh-huh. See, you have really that wilderness experience here. You know how somehow Mrs. Eddy explains wilderness, how perhaps I have it here. That's typical for David here. Wilderness, the vestibule in which a material sense of things disappears, and spiritual sense unfolds the great facts of existence. You see, that's the translating period. That it wasn't so that the safety of soul was established already, huh? But he had to gain that safety, huh? And he was constantly on the go. He was constantly persecuted. He was always in the defensive, nearly. Huh? And persecuted. So we get here that terrific sense of being chased, huh, by the enemy, chased by Saul. Do you say chased by Saul? Just like, a wild animal, never finding a resting place. Huh? And when he found the resting place, something else happened and he had to flee again. You see, that's the tone. Huh? It's really the wilderness period, like in Matthew, when you come to Saul, you have the experience of the three temptations in the wilderness with Jesus. Here with David, who was the father of Jesus, huh? He went through the same experience. He was constantly on the go, and yet, he was always safe, huh? And yet he always could somehow preserve his identity. Yeah, it's a terrific passage. You know, when you are pioneering in this idea, you have to go through that period. You can't expect that because we choose a higher idea, a more advanced idea, that then everything is just more quiet. Huh? It isn't at all. You are really hunted by all the animals, by all the animal qualities, by all the enemies. And one has to go through that period until one finds one's own safety in one's own consciousness. And this is very typical here. I just run quickly as far as I can remember through some of these experiences which we had here when it starts to with that sense. You know, it started out right there when Saul began to sense that David is a danger to him. And so Saul made up his mind to kill him. So David fled. And you now, from now on, have fleeing away. And he fled. Though Jonathan said, I am going to help you and I am going to be serving you, but he had to flee. He fled. David fled. Who helped him? Again, Michal, his wife, helped him to flee. You see, again, Michal, the daughter of Saul, like Jonathan, had a sense of the second degree and was helping him to escape. Then he fled. He fled and hid himself for 3 days. See, that's always that what we have to do. Once we are persecuted, the only thing we have to do is to hide ourselves for 3 days, to go back into our consciousness and establish the question, who am I? Is my ego soul? Is my I, my true I soul? Is that really mind and spirit or not? Or is it mortal mind and is it a material proposition? Then I'm not sure. But if I flee back, if I hide myself into that sanctuary where I see I'm the idea of mind, nothing material therefore can touch me in spirit. I'm absolutely separate from the material world. Then I find my safety in soul where I feel nothing can touch me. And so David hid himself for 3 days and then he fled, you see, and came to Abimelech. And there he jolly well had to accept his identity when Abimelech said, I don't give you anything to eat. He said, nothing doing, I take the showbread. I eat them. No matter if you allow me or not, no matter if I am allowed to eat it or not, because the ritual said that as a layman he is not allowed to eat the showbread, and he said, nothing doing. And we have to do that. We have to take the science as our science, not ask, am I allowed to study this science or am I not allowed to study this science? Does anybody make a law that prevents me from attending a talk and studying the books and reading the books? He jolly well said, to hell with all that ritual. I preserve my identity by taking all that is necessary to preserve my identity. Then he had to flee again away from Abimelech. And then he came into the hands of a king who wanted to kill him. Again. So what could he do? You see, David was a very shrewd man. He was very cute. You know, he just played the fool so that the king there, whatever his name was, thought that he's out of his mind and didn't kill him. He just used every trick he could find out to preserve his identity. He said, that's the important thing. That I can't let myself be tricked by mortal mind, by a king who wants to kill me because he doesn't know better. So I use all the tricks I can to preserve my identity. So from there, he had to flee again, and he fled into a cave. All the time you have, he went into the wilderness, he hid himself in the cave, see, hiding away, always into that secure place. It's always so that in your work, when once you are in the front line of your work, you need that retreating into a cave from time to time, just as Jesus afterwards would retreat into the wilderness or on a mountain. That's usually his place, because Jesus naturally represents a higher consciousness than David. But it is that sense of getting away from the world and finding one's peace in soul sense. So he went into that cave. He even kept the son of Abimelech safe, because the son of Abimelech should have been killed, because Abimelech didn't kill David. He kept even him safe. You have a terrific sense of safety that goes right through this period. David flees again out of that cave. Again he goes into the wilderness. Then suddenly David is surrounded and cornered by Saul. He had no more a possibility to escape out of his cave. And he was really cornered now. And what happened? Something from outside safety. Namely, the Philistines invaded the land, and so Saul had to return and fight the Philistines, and David was again safe. Can you see how sometimes something very unexpected comes and helps the safety of soul? He didn't have to find a way how to escape. The world was helping him how to keep his safety. And that's what we experienced too. So it was, so again, soul was kept safe. Then again you have that Saul pursued, once Saul has dealt with the Philistine, he returned and pursued David again. How was it then after the Philistines? It was, yes, that Saul pursued David again. And then came that incident in the cave, you remember, where David could have killed Saul, but he didn't do it. He said, "This is not my business. My business is not to kill." And he just showed Saul that he would acknowledge him as king, and that he would not put his hand, what you say, to the sword, to kill him. And then you had again that very wonderful incident when, you know, when David was saved by that woman, Abigail, you say? You know, we pronounce in German those biblical terms very differently than you do. So it's very difficult for me to know the right pronunciation of all these biblical terms. But you help me and then we get it. You know that Abigail, the wife of Nabal, you call it Nabal, he prevented David to kill Nabal. So that no blood was shed, as it is said. You see that wonderful sense that David had, that soul sense. He had always both manhood and womanhood in himself. As only the male here really wanted to to pay off her Nabal and say, "You tricked me, I pay back to you," you know. And he was at the point of killing Nabal for not having paid him for protecting the sheep of Nabal. And then came Abigail and said, "Don't do that." And that strong man listened. He listened to the womanhood sense in him and said, "What do I gain after all? What do I gain?" And the moment he listened to Abigail and didn't kill Nabal, Abigail became his wife. He wedded himself completely to that womanhood sense. And that's what soul does. Soul is gender, true gender. Gender is both male and female. And actually we only feel safe in the measure as we have both the male and the female qualities within us. I think more or less I ran through that period just pinpointing, but can you see that this is a completely different period than the period before, huh? Of spirit. Huh? Spirit just always stated, on what should you trust? Should you trust on the quantity or the quality? Should you trust matter or spirit? Where is your heart? Is your heart in matter, in quantities, in the number of people, in the strong men? Or is your heart with the few, with the spiritual, and trust in the that, so that the trust really should be put in the spirit? Then comes a period of soul completely different. Huh? Here you have your way from sense to soul, going right to the windowness, just fleeing constantly and trying to find your safety in the midst of all the trouble. Yes. So that's the third period. Huh? Can we see how the biblical writers, you know, they just took all sorts of stories they have been telling to each other along the fire at evening, and they are gathering these stories together and said, which of those stories could really, say, symbolize a synonymous term? And so they put them together. It isn't a historical record of what has happened, really. Okay. That would bring us to the next tone, but this gives us a chance for a break.